Mini episode 976 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
You know, I think back, Dion, and I go back to 1983, and I start thinking about Dan Marino.
He's dropping.
And then more recently,
what? Aaron Rodgers, picks number two and three are not Bo Callahan. Nobody's picking him.
Green Bay in the mid-20s. And there are all kinds of rumors going on right now. Why is this kid dropping in?
Everybody's freaking out, Sonny.
Jesus, what if he drops to seventh? Seahawks have seven. What if they ended up with Callahan?
They had that kid GM down in Jacksonville. What is his name?
Jeff Carson.
Well, congratulations, Jeff. You looks like you got yourself Bo Callahan to quarterback the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You
got
to be straight with me.
About what?
What's wrong with Callahan? Why is everyone passing on him?
I think he's a bust.
What?
Be honest, Jeff, it's a character thing for me. But look, I have other needs. So if you want to make a trade for six, I can make that happen right now. If you're not sold on Callahan, you can still come out of here with a handful of draft picks. You look like a seasoned pro.
And everybody wonders what you're up to next year.
Every year, someone comes out of this looking like a donkey.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good, because tomorrow I got a feeling it could be you if you don't make this deal. Take our number two pick this year, next year, and the next year after that. That's 3 years of number two picks.
Four. I want your next four number twos.
Yeah. Nah, Jeff, I'm not going to do that. Stay with me on planet Earth here, all right? You know what I just offered you is fair.
So 3 years of second round.
That's right, for your pick right now. And you and your guys can regroup, figure yourselves out, and relax. This is a good deal for both of us.
Deal.
Good, Jeff. You did good. Call it in.
And welcome back to the Gridiron and Hardwood Combine Recap Show. We are joined in the palatial Triple J Studios with myself, Jason, and Ricardo, and we're joined on the phones by Rick Morris, who's here breaking down all of the combine positional groups. So, Rick, at this point, I just want to toss it over to you and let you take it from here, starting with the quarterback group, and I'm sure we're going to hear some less than ideal commentary on some guys people like, and hopefully you will correct people on who should go at the top.
Consensus at number one. In fact, there's not. But there seems to be a consensus at number two. Voice a lot of people seems to be Josh Rosen.
I don't really have a lot of qualms about him, but the fact that he's the most pro-ready guy, that's not necessarily something you're looking for at the top of the draft. You're looking for upside. You're looking for a game changer. And I just don't know what his ceiling is. There are two other guys that are very high-risk, high-reward. They're in the mix there, too. You've got Baker Mayfield, who people are making a lot of the Manziel comparisons to him, because of his size, because of his attitude, because of a lot of reasons. So for good and bad, primarily bad, he seems to be compared to Johnny Manziel because of the traits. It scares me in terms of the Browns taking him, or quite frankly, any other team, because it's about once every 10 years or so, you get a small quarterback that comes into the league and is wildly successful. Drew Brees, Russell Wilson. Do you trust that your team is going to be the one to get this right, that you've got this once in almost a decade kind of a guy, and that he's going to be that guy? There's just so much risk involved because of the size and having to sort of beat the odds in terms of that. Josh Allen is the opposite. Josh Allen is all physical tools, all arm. He had a great combine in terms of his ability to throw the ball long and fairly accurately.
But anyway, I haven't mentioned thus far is the one that I think should be the top quarterback overall. I tend in a lot of ways, I kind of define myself as the old, to use that term from the 2008 presidential election, the bitter clinger. I am the bitter clinger. I don't change my opinions on things very easily. I cling to my opinions. A year ago, we were saying Sam Darnold is possibly the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. And his 2017 wasn't as great as his 2016, granted. And he made a lot of turnovers and had a lot of issues like that. You know who's another guy who had a lot of turnovers? Is Brett Favre. Brett Favre learned to kind of rein it in enough. And these are the things that, again, you can adjust the way that you play in terms of that. For example, using two hands on the football, which a lot of times he doesn't do enough, that's an easier thing to do than, say, changing your throwing motion. Some people are also questioning his throwing motion, by the way, but it's been pretty successful thus far. Sam Darnold, with his projectability, his upside, the things that he can do, Sam Darnold just looks like he could be a very special quarterback. And again, not to put myself over too much, but the last couple of quarterbacks I wanted the Browns to take in the draft were Deshaun Watson, Teddy Bridgewater in 2014, Jared Goff in 2016. I wanted them to trade up to one. And I'd say it's turned out pretty well on all three of those guys. Say Darnold, as much as some people are ready to dismiss me for it right now, because he's not, you know, it's trendy to turn on. You know, look at the turnovers and all the things that he didn't do in 2017. But I'm not about trendy, Jason. I'm about sticking to my guns as quarterback in my book.
Well, and the funny thing there is, I seem to be on the other side of it. As a draft Nick, I just keep looking at all of the assets that you see at the top. And I'm like a kid in a candy store with, like, a nickel in my hand. I need more, and I got to find a way to get more. So I'm always going to fall in, and most Browns fans hate this. I want to trade back. I want to get more picks. I want to trade back to trade up. So I get that that's not feasible, and I know that there's some glaring issue to fix here. And to be honest with you, I'm right there with you on Darnold at the top. So if you're going to say there is one guy, I think it's Darnold. Flat out, he's got the size, he's got the arm strength. And here's something that no one's picking up on, and it's driving me nuts. And maybe it's a Browns fan thing, maybe Buffalo people will get it too. But when you are a fan of one of these lesser good teams that can't get first downs on a regular basis, you find yourself in situations like a 3rd and 4. And you're like, we should be able to do this. And they don't. And they consistently are bad at moving the chains. One thing that if you go back and watch the tape, Sam Darnold, to me, might be the best quarterback, prospect or existing, NFL starter or not, that I have ever seen at processing the progressions quickly and getting the ball out with touch, delivered at just the right point in just the right place so that his receiver can make a play. I've not Phillip Rivers, not Ben Roethlisberger. I cannot think of someone who's better at the short to intermediate stuff. And if you're a fan of a team in the top that's bad, like the Browns, or even the team like the Giants who are having some troubles, there's something to the fact that he is able to get out of trouble and do it well. So for me, Sam Darnold does not project to be one guy. I think I agree with the Rosen projection of Jay Cutler, and that's more to do with him sort of mentally than arm talent-wise, but he does have talent. But for me, Sam Darnold is he's Flacco's long ball with the potential to be Aaron Rodgers above the shoulders and be crafty like Rivers and have pocket awareness like Roethlisberger. And when you throw all that stuff together, I don't care if he doesn't play in 2018. You make that pick for what he's going to be, not for what he is. So I absolutely agree with you. If the move at one, let's just say hypothetically, is it has to be quarterback, I agree with you, Rick. It has to be Sam Darnold.
You know, when you look at it too, you had sort of questioned me a little bit the other day in terms of Tyrod Taylor, necessarily Auger, Baker, Mayfield being the pick, being another smaller quarterback. And I said to you, I didn't think that was necessarily the case. There's an optimistic scenario here, which I'm not sure if I buy into or not, but it's occurred to me fairly recently, and that is Tyrod Taylor, again, he was a fairly polarizing quarterback in Buffalo. He's a guy who didn't make a lot of turnovers, but is it possible he could be a good influence on Sam Darnold? Just a thought.
I know the first conclusion most people are going to draw is that, and we kind of touched on this in the very beginning, if you're going to get a bridge quarterback, and that bridge quarterback doesn't look like your typical big pocket passer, and there happens to be a guy in the draft that is not your typical big pocket passer, people are going to draw that conclusion. They're going to say, well, John Dorsey got this guy specifically because they are similar to this. But to your point, it's an interesting dynamic that they could potentially be bringing in someone who is not thought of necessarily as a running quarterback or a mobile quarterback, but because he's an efficient quarterback. And maybe at this point in Tyrod Taylor's career, he's been through enough and he's seen enough that he can pass something along that could help smooth that transition.
We've seen a lot of one-year deal guys recently here. Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade, Rose with the Cavs. There's a disincentive right there to sort of coach along younger players who are going to be poised to take your job. And as good of a guy as Taylor is, he is invested in, as any of us would be. I'm not saying that it's from selfishness. It's basic human interest. He's invested in trying to get his next contract. Mm-hmm. He'd be a dummy if he wasn't trying to do that. A pure caretaker along the lines of a Josh McCown, who I wish dearly they'd never let go of in the first place, that's the kind of guy that I kind of wish was here instead of Taylor. A Sam Bradford, perhaps. Somebody who at this point, I think, knows what he is, accepts what he is. Is Taylor at the right point in his career to be that? And I think people are getting excited next year because, yay, we might win six games instead of three or four games because we have Taylor. Does anybody really care about that, or should they?
Well, let me give you an answer. Apparently, the answer is yes. It should matter because I don't know how many conversations I've had with people in this offseason in particular where, and you'll both really appreciate this, within the world of social media, at times when we get in these debates with people, you can leave words or you can do other things. And most recently, I actually posted a picture for anyone who has seen the remake of 21 Jump Street. This basically the scene where Ice Cube finds out that one of his employees is dipping his ladle in the wrong soup, so to speak. There's that typical Ice Cube-like confused, angry look.
Right.
And I screenshot that, and then I created a meme out of it that basically says, as Browns fans, hey, we need a complete rebuild. We need to blow it up, start from scratch. That's what we need. And then the next line is, well, nobody told me we were going to lose. Okay, seriously. The rebuild is great. I'm all for it. I think everyone knows that I'm all for it. But I'm all for it in the and this is probably going to be even further from what Rick is saying in his own stance. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with going 0-16 or 1-15 or 2-14 as long as at some point at the conclusion of said rebuild, now we're talking 7-8-9-10-11-12. I'm not okay with the typical Browns fan who is saying, let's make moves, i.e. what Rick just said, so that we can win a game, or so that we can win three or four games. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in making moves that makes this a respectable franchise again that is consistently decent to good year in and year out. So, yeah, I'm not in favor of that, but apparently plenty of Browns fans are just so tired of being or the laughingstock of the league that they are willing to get wins at no matter what the cost. So while I agree with you, Rick, that shouldn't matter, apparently it really does. But with that being said, I think two things are going to converge together here. I think you're absolutely right. This is an opportunity for Tyrod Taylor to set up that final contract. And here's the thing. If Tyrod Taylor comes to Cleveland, Jarvis Landry comes to Cleveland, Josh Gordon is God's gift to the world, and so on. If they end up winning even six, seven games and Darnold is ready to go, say start of 19, I would not be surprised one bit if Tyrod Taylor got traded to a team that was, again, in desperate need of a quarterback, maybe in a different kind of situation, where as soon as that trade is consummated, they start beginning to renegotiate to pay him more because, hey, he's the quarterback that pulled Cleveland out of the abyss. And if that's all he's got to go on, that's plenty. So that's an interesting dynamic there for what Tyrod Taylor can do for his future, depending on what happens in 2019. Now, we're kind of getting up against it in time here, so let's push over into the running backs. We've talked about Barkley I don't think we need to really hit on that. He is a perfect prospect, and I think we've covered that. So what I'd like to get into, and I'll just drop a couple names real quick, and then you feel free to take it from there. If Saquon Barkley is not someone you're going after for your team, and your team desperately needs a featured back, not by committee, not Thunder and Lightning, not Wildcat, if you want a bell cow, 20-plus touches a game, who's going to carry your team in that department, I personally like Nick Chubb. I do not like Sony Michel, and let that reverberate through the ethos of sports media, and people lose their minds, but I don't like Sony Michel. I like Nick Chubb. He runs with intensity, and he is a, you know, all-purpose, typical smash-mouth runner that can do a little stuff in space. I love Rashad Penny out of San Diego State. I feel like he's sort of a poor man's Fournette. I really like Kalen Ballage from Arizona State. Alex, our Pac-12 consultant, is absolutely going to hate that I said that. Alex is an Arizona U guy and absolutely hates Arizona State. But Kalen Ballage is another one. He's sort of the poor man's poor man Fournette. He's not going to run around a whole lot of guys, but he will run over and through them. So with those, and clearly, Rick, you know that I'm a big fan of one guy to do it all and all of that. So Nick Chubb, Rashad Penny, Kalen Ballage would be the guys I'd look at, and I'd even consider maybe a late-round flyer on a Bo Scarborough if you wanted, like, who's a kid in Tennessee? Big dude. Alabama. Little help here.
Yeah, there's some interesting backs out of the SEC there, and, you know, it's a thing where both of the Georgia backs are very interesting. Chubb is a guy where, and I'm sad to say this because that's another one of the guys I thought we'd be mentioning at the next level in the same breath as Elliott and Gurley, and maybe we still will, but I'm starting to wonder after his knee injury if he's ever going to be what we thought he was going to be beforehand, because he would have been a lock first rounder before that knee injury. You look at some of the prospects here. Ronald Jones II is somebody who is very interesting as well, coming out of USC with that offense there. And, again, a long line of great USC backs. We really haven't seen any of them that recently. The closest thing I think we'd seen to any great USC running backs recently was O.J. Simpson getting released from the pen, to be honest with you. But somebody I think. Geis is a guy I think that is sort of the consensus number two pick, or has been, and whether he has a chance to be the consensus in the draft, I think the pro days are going to have a lot to say about that.
Look, running back to me this time around is pretty straightforward. You're either getting a sort of big lead guy, or you're getting someone who's a compliment. And to be honest with you, I think the better way to go for any team looking at running back is to get the bigger guys. This is a good, deep draft of big guys. Now, I got to say, some of this is lack of sample size. Some of it is the sample size I saw I'm really not impressed with. So one thing that does confuse me, especially if you've been following the SEC, is the consensus seems to be Barkley is going in the top two, period. And if it's not to Cleveland, it's going to be to the Giants. And you and I have talked about maybe it is going to Cleveland at two, and that's a whole other conversation if we have time we'll get into. But for me, if you're looking at this, I don't see a Duke Johnson. I don't see a Danny Whitehead. I don't see a complimentary back. I think you're going to see guys that look like that, like a Sony Michel that looks like they can rush the ball as well as they can catch it. I just don't think that this is the draft you do that in. So the one SEC thing that jumps out at me is the idea that Barkley goes high, and then there's no other running back taken in the first round unless your name is Geis. Kid from LSU, very similar in size to Saquon Barkley, a little bit lighter in the pants. When I watch Barkley, I'm blown away. He jumps off the screen. When I watch Geis, it's like, okay, yeah, he's a good running back, but nothing about him surprises me, and nothing about him tells me that he should be going in the middle of the first round. So moving on from the running backs, and we already touched on some of the wide receivers. At this point, I'm just going to sort of open that up to you, Rick, to see if there's somebody you want to touch on that we haven't. We mentioned Courtland Sutton, who at one point in my evaluation, I thought he was going to be a top 15 pick. You've got Ridley from Alabama, who absolutely looks like one of those typical all-around complete backs or complete wide receivers. You know, he catches short stuff, intermediate stuff, deep, whatever. You can put him in the slot. He blocks. All that stuff's great. It's the frame that concerns me. If you could tell me I'm getting all that in 6'3", 220, I like it a little bit more. And then to me, Equanimeous St. Brown is probably number three. DJ Chalk is number four. And then somewhere in there, you're going to mix in DJ Moore. Kirk from, was it Texas A&M? But yeah, I think once you get out of the first round, if you're not taking
A&M, yeah.
If you're not taking a wide receiver in the first round, I think it is a veritable smorgasbord of wide receiver gold in the second round. And that brings us into a different sort of subset of that wide receiver group where you're going to find a lot of guys in that 6 foot to 6 foot two range. They were very productive, like Deion Kane, like a Deontay Burnett from USC, who, again, is not he's not a deep threat guy, but if you're needing a slot, he's very solid. And then you got guys like Michael Gallup from Colorado State, who's a little bit bigger, but still has fits into that. I don't think he's got take the top off the defense capability, but the guy can be a very productive wide receiver. So I think there is something to be said for that third and fourth round where you can get guys that might even be able to step in year one and be productive. Whether they're going to be 90 catch, 1,400 yard, 10 touchdown guys, that's a whole different conversation.
True. And I think that's the thing. This is a draft, again, you look at stats of recent years, 2014 most of all, that franchise players in their galore. This is one, you know, a lot of guys will be the number one on a lesser team or two on a pretty good team. This is a good draft day. It doesn't have the high-end freak guys in there much, but depth is certainly the word of the day crop.
Now, we could spend some time talking about defensive tackle, but that particular position for me is very, very black and white, very cut and dry. Vita Vea is probably the number one defensive tackle in the draft. And with a name like that, don't be surprised when I tell you that he is Samoan and plays for the Washington Huskies. We saw recently that the Cleveland Browns, who also had a defensive tackle who is Samoan, who played for Washington, got traded away to New England for what we hear is a third-round pick, but in all reality is really a fourth-round pick. And that is that he's nice. Yep. He is what he is. And I'm going to use a phrase that really is probably going to make Rick's skin crawl. Vita Vea, while probably a hair better than Danny Shelton on the agility side of things, they are both the same thing. They are a big body that eats up two blocks. Feel free to vomit in your mouth.
as far as people getting morons in the Cleveland media who will do this, as they did with Danny Shelton back in the day, the old quiet storm at the turn of the but he plays up two blockers. Like, it's been drafted highly to do. And again, spend a high pick on a defensive tackle. That would be one of the things that they could do. Create a hole, fill a hole, and trade it Danny Shelton.
So, in addition to Vita Vea, the next Danny Shelton, and I should point out that for those of you who agree with us, that the idea that a guy is just there to eat up two blocks is not willing to put him in that top 10 to top 15 range. Danny Shelton taken to 12. Vita Vea projected to go in the late 20s.
Right.
So maybe the NFL at least is coming around to this idea that we need our defensive tackles to do more. We need more of the Fletcher Coxes of the world. So with that, there's really not a lot with defensive tackle. There's value there. Deron Payne from Alabama showed that he's a lot more agile than we thought he was. So again, combine is a tool to confirm or to reassess if we need to go back and take another look. Maybe Deron Payne is not just a eat-up two-blockers kind of guy. We also have I like this kid Nandi from Florida State, but he's definitely a day two at the earliest kind of pick. So defensive tackle is definitely not a sexy area, so we'll just leave it at that. Those are the big names we'll be worried about in the first, say, 50 picks. But moving away from that and getting into the sexy side of it, edge rushers. There are quite a few of them. I have one guy at the very top that I'm way more excited about than most people. And then we've got some other guys that are projects, but I think are going to be fine. For me, the big name out there that no one's really talking about to the length that they should, unless you're talking to Bucky Brooks or Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network, is a little guy I like to call Baby Vaughn. His name is Tremaine Edmonds. He is a 4-3 prototype outside linebacker out of Virginia Tech. He's 6'5", 250 pounds, very long, very quick, very fast and long speed. And as Mike Mayock pointed out this week, he doesn't even know how to play football yet. And he will probably go somewhere in the top 10 to top 15. It would absolutely be a sport-equivalent wet dream if he were to fall into the 20s, and then I would be jumping up and down in my living room floor demanding that the Browns trade up to go get him. After that, we've got Marcus Davenport, who is another one of these guys that tells the rest of the world, yeah, look at the combine. You need to go watch this kid on tape. I don't know where he fits yet. He looks more like a big defensive end that's going to try to convert to a 3-4 outside linebacker. Some are saying that Roquan Smith might be just as good weak side outside as he would be on the inside. And then we've got this kid from Boise State whose name I can't even pronounce yet. But we've got probably somewhere in the ballpark of about 6 or 7 instant starters at the edge rusher position, regardless of scheme, in the first 50 picks. Well, and Bradley Chubb enters into a nice little psychological thing that just happened. with picks 1 and 4, my brain is automatically going to default to the things that are actually on the table. And despite what some fans think, I just think that Bradley Chubb is not in play for either 1 or 4. I think he's a lock to go to 3 or wherever Indianapolis is picking, as long as it's in, say, the top 6. Bradley Chubb, the rub on him is that he is as good a pass rusher as there is in this draft. My concern is that we're doing that thing again where we are saying he's the best in this draft and therefore he must be equally as good as all the others who were best in their draft. I don't think he's even Myles Garrett, to be honest with you, and that's not a bias. Yes. That's just that Myles Garrett brings a skill set. He came into the league with multiple moves. My personal experience watching Bradley Chubb is that while he is an absolute beast at the bull rush, I don't know that he has anything else. I think he's another one of these guys that just overpowers everybody. And he does well with good technique, and he is a very good athlete. But when you're looking at a team, again, bring it back to the Browns, when you're talking about a team that's picking 1 and 4 and has Myles Garrett, Emmanuel Ogba, and Carl Nassib, you have a 3-man rotation for 2 spots already. Why are you going to waste a top 5 pick on a guy that's not better than the guy you got last year? So, Freudian slip, whatever it may be, completely omitted Bradley Chubb because I automatically have penciled him into Indianapolis.
I think, again, there's just a couple questions about him that, again, you're not seeing a lot of other people vocalizing they have any questions. That's where, again, and I'm not denying that he is a great, great athlete. I think you put your finger on it perfect. Well, sure, this year does that automatically put him on a level with the best drafts. And I think that's what we need to be looking at.
All right, well, we're going to get one last segment here with Rick in a moment. We're going to go into the defensive secondary only because it is pretty fairly deep. Lots of stuff to get into with that, especially with the intrigue at the top of the draft. I have a very strong take on a certain player that everyone else in the world seems to think is, you know, the football god's gift to whatever. And I'm going to contradict that here, and I'll let Rick respond.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, The Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.